So there are a few things that we want to discuss and sort of loose ends that we want to tie together here in the sugya of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim about Motzi Shemra. One of them is the Ran's understanding of Rabbeinu Tam. That's on Daf Ches Amud Aleph. In the Tosis Dibra Maskil Motzi Shemra. And Tosis quotes Rabbeinu Tam that the issue here in our sugya with regard to the Edim is Ede Ha'av. The father brings two Edim to disqualify the Ede Ha'bal. And therefore in this context we really have a Dini Nefashis case. We understand the Chachamim that require 23 judges because we have Ede Ha'bal that are testifying that she had Znus, and we have Ede Ha'av who are testifying against the first pair of Ede. Now, the question here is the following. At this point in time, once the Ede Ha'av have disqualified the Ede Ha'bal, does that give the Av, the father, the rights to impose knas? Meaning, the Torah says in the case of Motzi Shemra, the Baal for accusing her in an unjustified way of having this relationship, he has to pay libel fees. I call it slander fees. We call it Motzi Shemra fees. Well, has he really slandered her? According to one Shita, which is the Rambam Shita, before we get to Rabbeinu Tam, he has slandered her, and we know that he slandered her because the father brought two Edim that were mazim, the first two Edim. That's called Hazama. And in the case of Hazama, the Torah says that we believe the mazimim, the second pair of Edim, and we assume, without a shadow of a doubt, that the first pair of Edim perjured themselves and they lied in their testimony, so that the Baal had invited Edim, who were a bunch of no good liars, who were in fact going to be put to death because they testified against this woman that she had this nus. And obviously he slandered his wife. So that's the Rambam Shita. The Rambam says that the precondition for Motzi Shemra is that after his claim, the husband's claim, Nimtza Hadover Sheker. Those are the three words in the Rambam. And the Rambam asks, how do you know he's Sheker? Maybe he's telling the truth. The answer is because the Edei Av were mazim, the Edei Baal. So we believe the Edei Av, the mazimim. We establish without a shadow of a doubt that the Edim that the husband had brought were Edim Zomim, and they lied, as we would say today, lied under oath. And therefore we know that the Baal is fabricating this whole story, because see, here was his proof, you know, he heard it from two reliable witnesses, and they're not reliable at all. Rabbeinu Tam is a different Shita. Rabbeinu Tam, which is about 15 lines up from the bottom on Daf Ches Amud Aleph, he says that what happened was the Edei Ha'bal were makhish. The Edei Ha'av, excuse me, were makhish the Edei Ha'bal. Now that's called hakhosha. Hakhosha is what we call trey utrey. Should I write this on the board? Maybe just to make sure that we have it. Okay. So we have here something called Hakhosha. Now, Hakhosha is the same as Trey Utrey. These are synonymous terms. Now, how is this radically different than Hazama? I don't mean in terms of I'm not talking about the actual description of the scenario. We'll get to that in a minute. But halachically, how is that different than Hazama?
Well, they're just saying that something else happened, not that.
Well, again, you're a step ahead of me. I'm going to get to that question in a minute. How is the scenario different? What is Hakasha? What exactly happened? And what is Hazama? But I'm asking something different, much more fundamental and basic. What is the difference between Hazama and Hakasha on a conceptual level in terms of the impact in Din? Yeah?
I mean, Hazama is a Vadai.
Excellent. Hazama is a Vadai. Which means that we definitely know that the first pair of Edim lied, right? They perjured themselves. And Hakosha becomes trey and trey. Trey and trey means two against two. That's a phrase, an idiomatic phrase, which means we really don't know who's telling the truth. So this becomes a suffix. So here's where Rabbeinu Tam is. Whoops. Here, I got so nervous I dropped the thing. What is that noise over there? Are they throwing bombs here? So anyway, so here's the radical departure of Rabbeinu Tam. Against the Rambam is very clear. If you want to call him a Motzi Shema for bringing these witnesses, and we know that these witnesses perjured themselves, they told a whole fabrication, then I understand that this guy, beyond the shadow of a doubt, is this Baal, he's a real klefta, you know, he's a real cookie, you know, he's a slanderer, and he pays Motzi Shema Knas. But Rabbeinu Tam Rabbeinu Tam is a little bit different than the Rambam, because at the end of the day, do we know that these Edom are lying? Okay, so now let's talk about the Hechatim. So what exactly is the scenario of Hakasha?
You just have contradicting testimonies.
Well, what do they say? What did the second pair of Edom say?
That they weren't even there.
No, who weren't there? No, that's Hazama. That's Hazama. Hazama means you weren't there to see the crime. That's called Hazama.
Someplace else.
Correct, that she was someplace else at that time. And we know, because she was with us, that she did not engage in this kind of illicit relationship. They say that, you know, we were there at the time, and this is what we saw. They're telling us, you know, again, they're claiming it's honest to goodness. Who knows? Who... You know, the Baal has his vested interest. Maybe he paid off these Edom. The Av has his vested. Imagine Mayor Moss. Maybe it's worth $1,000. So he's going to take $500, pay off the Edom. It's worth it. You know what I'm saying? So we don't know who's been paid off over here. That's called Akhosh. That's called trade. Trade leads to a suffix we don't know. But Don, in your case, where the second pair of Edom say you couldn't have seen that crime because you were with us elsewhere. That's already Azoma. That creates a Vadai. So the Rambam wants to say he's a Motzi Shema because we know he's a no good lawyer and he brought in these Edom. Rabbeinu Tam is going out on a limb and he's saying that even if we disqualify the Edom because of a Suffolk, that's enough to make him into a Motzi Shema and he has to pay the Klan.
So we're calling it a Vadai because we're accepting the evidence of the second witnesses.
And that's what the Torah says. I can't argue with the Torah. You know, again, if you want to, there are other places you can go up the block here. I'll give you five different locations that you can argue with the Torah. But we're not in that league. You know, we accept the Torah. And Rava in Masechta Bava Kamma calls it a chidush. Chidush means it's not logical. The Torah doesn't give us any logical reason why. It has to do with the mechanics of the halacha. I'll give you an example. Again, this is a whole discussion. I'll make it short. Make it short. Two Edom come in and testify. Now two Edom come in and say, we know that you stole something. And therefore you are disqualified for testimony. Who do you believe in this case? The first pair of Edom deny the whole story. What do you mean we stole? We didn't steal anything. Who do you believe in this case?
The second one.
Why? That's called Nogeya Be'edus. If the Edom turn around and they say, we didn't steal anything, they're not believed, because they're on trial. The Chiddush of Edom Zomim is that in the case of Edom Zom, it's not a Hakhosha in terms of whether she did this action or not, and there's two against two. In the case of Edom Zomim, the Torah says that the first pair of Edom aren't on trial. And when they're on trial for having plagiarized them, they can't claim, well, we were there. That's meaningless. It's not trade. It's two against zero. Again, that's not a logical conclusion. That's a halachic conclusion. You understand there are two systems of logic. There's human, rational, intuitive logic, and then there's the logic of halacha. If you ever learn the sugi of Kal Vachomer and exactly how Kal Vachomer works, which is a sugi of Bava Kamma, you'll see exactly what I mean. Kal Vachomer is not logical. At least not in the human sense. So if you go to Princeton where they write books in mathematical symbols on logic, you can get a book this thick that's only on logic. So that's not going to work for Kal Vachomer. Kal Vachomer would not fit into Princeton's, they have a whole department there of mathematics and logic. You know. But it's a logic within the halachic system. So in this case of Akhasha, well, we're both claiming that she was either here at that time or she was there at that time. So the whole issue is where she was. You know, did she commit this crime or not? Then you have trade. But in the case of Hazama, when the Mazim was saying, forget it, I don't know whether she did this act. I know the Mazim don't know whether she did. Maybe she did the act. They don't know. They're just saying that you you perjured yourself because there's no way that you could have testified on this. You were with us in Chicago at that time. So now the Eidim become on trial. That's like the case of Pasolinita Begazlanusa, where the second pair of Eidim say, we know that you stole, you know, you shoplifted, and therefore you're Pasolinitas. We believe that because in that case they're on trial.
Now, are these, this whole thing we're looking at, as far as the first and the second witnesses, is this strictly for capital crimes? Or for lesser crimes?
No, even monetary testimony. Well, but again, in the case of Otzi Shemra, the reason why the Torah has this parsha, and the reason why you pay such a stiff knas, a very heavy knas, is because we're dealing with a nefashos, we're dealing with a capital crime. But the basic rules that we set up here about hazam and akash, all that we discussed the last 10-15 minutes, that's as relevant to monetary law as it is to capital crimes. Fine. Now we have the Ran. So everything that I presented to you now in understanding Rabbeinu Tam is the simple, straightforward reading of Rabbeinu Tam. The Ran can't tolerate it. It couldn't be. It's like they once had an Asifat Rabbanim, a gathering, a conference of rabbis. So Reb Chaim Brisker was Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. So somebody got up and quoted a Tosfos. So Reb Chaim banged on the table and said, "Name, there is no such Tosfos." So afterwards, the guy looked it up and he saw Reb Chaim was right, that he had misquoted the Tosfos. So they came up to Reb Chaim, they said to him, "Rebbe, do you know every Tosfos in Shas that you could have said that there is no such Tosfos?" The answer is it couldn't be that there's such a Tosfos. So I don't know every Tosfos in Shas, but it's impossible that there should be such a Tosfos. Mm-hmm. So that's what the Ran is saying about this Rabbeinu Tam. It's impossible. You can't take Rabbeinu Tam literally, because you can't call a person a Motzi Shemra when you don't know, you don't have a clue whether his Eidim were the ones who fabricated fabricated this lie, or it was the second pair of Eidim who came. We don't know. The halacha doesn't give any extra credence to the second pair of Eidim over the first pair of Eidim. Where was she at that time? Was she in New York, or was she in Chicago? Well, you have two Eidim saying she was in New York and two saying she was in Chicago. Probably if it was winter time, she was in New York. I mean, New York's pretty cold in the winter too. I mean, I still remember blizzards that were 6 feet tall, but it's not as bad as Chicago.
You just said it comes to the Torah, we hold by the second.
No, that's only in Azama. Oh, everybody, Shalom, yes, I bet the whole shear is down the tubes. Again, only in the case of Azama, because the Eidim are on trial, that's why I tried to give a little of a rationale, then we believe the second pair of Eidim. But we're talking about Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam uses the word Hakosha. Hakosha means there's a debate as to where she was located at that time. That's trade. That's a flip of coin. There's no way, and the Torah doesn't accept any way of determining which of these two witnesses, pairs of witnesses, are telling the truth and which are not. So how could a person be chayav a stiff, heavy penalty as a slanderer called a motzi shemra when you have a kosher situation you don't know? It's a 50-50. Make a person pay because there's a 50% chance that maybe he brought in false witnesses? There's an equally 50% chance that his witnesses are telling the truth. So the Ran reinterprets Rabbeinu Tam, and he says that the word hakosha here means hechishu es atzma. This is the Ran's take on Rabbeinu Tam. Hechishu es atzma, which means that there was no second pair of witnesses. There was only one pair of witnesses. And that pair was the pair that was brought in by the father. But what do we do when a pair of Eidim come in? We interrogate them. And what happened is that during the course of the interrogation, we found that one witness contradicted the other witness. Now, I can't tell you which of the witnesses is lying, but I can certainly tell you that one of the two of the witnesses is lying. And that's enough to undermine and disqualify this entire unit, this entity of Eidim. Hence, we know that there's falsehood in this testimony because they contradicted one or the other. You see, that's the question: how do you interpret that one word in Rabbeinu Tam? You could write a whole book on this question: what does Rabbeinu Tam mean by the word akosha?
You meant there's only one pair brought in by the Baal.
No. That's it. There's only one pair of Edom on the face of the earth.
Not by.
And brought by the Baal. But I'm just saying there was no other pair. Because again, according to the Rambam, there was a second pair. They were the Edom Hamazimim. We thought that according to Rabbeinu Tam, before the Ran came up to the plate, that here in the case of Rabbeinu Tam, there were two pairs of Edom. There was one pair of Edom brought by the Baal, and then a counter Edom that was brought by the Av. Name says the Ran, that's not what Rabbeinu Tam had in mind. If you have two pairs of Edom, flip a coin. We don't know who's telling the truth. There's only one pair of Edom. So what does Rabbeinu Tam mean by the word Hakasha? Says the Ran, Hikishu es Atzman. There were two witnesses, and only two witnesses. They were brought by whom? The Baal, and they contradicted each other. We took them into a room separately, we interrogated them, and we found discrepancy. If that be the case, then they're really fighting within each other. This is a Milchemet Achim, as we call it. This is a battle within the Edus themselves. And in such a case, we know that they're not telling the truth. Or at least one of them are not telling the truth. Once one of them are not telling the truth, there's falsehood in this pair, this entity called the Kad of Edim. Who brought in this falsehood? The Baal? For that he's gonna get tarred and feathered. He's gonna pay a very stiff penalty. The only problem is that Rabbeinu Tam has another possibility. Not only does he have Hakosha, but if you look carefully at his language, he says, oh, this is, if you're on Daf Chesam Rav, count up from the bottom of this very long Tosfos, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up. Oh, lokivnu edusam. You see those three words? Now that's a real headache for the Rav. Because what do you mean, oh? Or alternatively, lokivnu edusam. Lokivnu edusam means that there was no, that they failed to have a, what's the antonym of discrepancy? What would be an antonym for discrepancy? What, consistency? Okay, we'll call it consistency. They failed in consistency. Well, if they failed in consistency, that's exactly the same as a chishuas atzma. How could the Ran understand Rabbeinu Tam? Rabbeinu Tam offers two alternatives in Motzi Shem Ra. And yet, according to the Ran, Rabbeinu Tam's really repeating himself. There are no two alternatives here. They're Hainu Hach. They're the same exact alternative. Because what's the difference between saying Hechishu es Atzmam and Lokivnu es Edusam? Lokivnu es Edusam means they could not consistently testify. There was a discrepancy in between the two. Unless we say, yeah,
but then they're thrown out automatically, no?
Well, are you trying to answer my question, or are you asking a different question?
No. If would mean that they're
totally disqualified, sure, because there's a contradiction in between the two. But I'm asking, what's the difference between Rabbeinu Tam starts with A, and then he says OB. Oh. A is Hakfishu, which according to the Rabbi means Es Atzman. There was no second pair of witnesses. And Lokivnu Edusa. Lokivnu Edusa means, the lechavein means to again, you call it consistency. I think there's a better English word which I can't think of right now. Lechavein es edusa means that they both said the same thing.
It doesn't jive.
Doesn't jive. Okay, we like the word jive. I once said in a class, I don't dig it, and they have no clue what I was thinking. But I'm saying I really dated myself. You know? Anyway. And then this guy said to me, that's really sick, Rebbe. So I said, well, who got sick? You know, I said, but anyway, language is changing. So you have to move with the times. Not the New York Times, but anyway. So what is going on here? What does Rebbe Tam mean? Oh, lokivnu edusam. I mean, you just finished saying hechishu es atzman. So you're saying the same thing over again in different words, but it's all the same.
So it's either a subject or it gets thrown out.
Again, I'm not sure, Ruben, if you're coming to answer my question. No, what's the difference between
the first? The,
between Hikishu es Atzmam, which is the Ryan's reading of the Rebbeinu Tam, mm-hmm. And the second case of Lochivnu Edusam.
The first is Suffolk, the Chariot Trey, and or.
Just one second. According to the Ryan, you have to get this through. There's only one pair of Eidim. If you say the word trade, trade, the Ran gets very upset with you. There's only one pair of Eidim. What does Hakasha mean according to the Ran? There was Hakasha between one witness that the Baal brought and the other witness. There's only one pair of Eidim. And then the Ran, and then Rabbeinu Tam says, "Oh, lo kivnu eidusam." That's exactly the same thing. You're just repeating yourself.
You're saying, in one case, they're not consistent,
right?
Or they're not consistent. I don't know. One's inconsistent, one's not consistent.
Yeah, I mean, inconsistent and not consistent. I know you have to write a philosophical treatise on that. I just want to tell you what I saw in the Gurus Yitzchak. He wants to suggest that lo kivnu eidusa, according to the Ran, means something totally different. What does it mean? Lechavinus eidus means to complete your eidus. Lechavein means to have all the answers to all the questions. How many questions are we going to drill the witnesses, right? And there are seven questions, right? That's called the chakiros. Well, what happens if one of the witnesses says, "I don't know," to one of the questions? Like, he can't remember what day it happened. That's called lo kivnu eidusam. To be mechaber your eidus means you're like, you have a target and you want to shoot at the target and hit the bullseye. And he didn't hit the bullseye because the target is to give me seven answers to seven questions, and he can only answer six out of seven. That's lo kivnu eidusam, and that's a gavaldu gechidish, because then we're saying that even in this case we believe the eidim are lying. Why? Because if you're telling the truth, why can't you give me the answer to that question? And we wipe off the Eidim. And when we wipe off the Eidim, Rabbeinu Tam says, Yochayev is a Motzi Shem. That's a bit more of a Chiddush. See, in the first case, where the Ran defines it as a Chiddush as Atzman, there I understand that one of the two witnesses is perjuring himself. In the second case, where one of the two Eidim says, Eidim Yodea, you know, I would give him a Tzalash, you know, I would give him a prize for the fact that he's being honest. He could have fabricated it. You know, it's a very embarrassing situation. You know, they ask you, well, did it happen on the first of the month or the second of the month? You're coming in to give testimony, my friend. You better be responsible about this. What do you mean you don't know what day of the month it is? So stay home. You know, who asked you to come into Beis to tell me that you don't know what day it was? So, you know, a person would be very tempted to fudge it a little bit if you follow what I mean by that.
But is that really aduso, or is that probably
seven chakirot? If they cannot answer all seven questions, we throw them out of court. But again, I'm saying the following: why do we throw them out of the court? Because they didn't do a good enough job. They weren't meticulous enough to give us all the answers to clarify exactly what happened and when it happened and where it happened. But that doesn't mean that they lied. I mean, you could have an honest to goodness witness. He's a little bit naive. Came into Beis Din, he didn't realize they would drill him. You know, he didn't learn. You know, he didn't read that printout, how to give testimony. You know, today you look it up on Google, how to give testimony, they'll tell you, well, you better have answers to the fine seven. He didn't have the time. He was very busy. You know, he was the CEO of his company. He didn't have time to go online and figure out what seven questions they're going to drill him with. So he came into Pence, and all of a sudden they hit him with a question, you know, and he starts thinking, you know, well, gee, what day of the week was? Was it a Sunday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday? You know, was I, you know, was my day off or this? I went between the lunch break. And he's trying to figure out. He's honest. He could have easily fudged me. If I would have been in that situation, it would be very tempting to, you know, to. I had a professor in college when I took his final. So he told me, look, I don't think you know much, but you did a good job in fluffing it. That was the word he used. Not fudging it, but fluffing it. And at some point in the discussion, he gave me a decent passing grade only because I did a good job of fluffing it. And he said, if I would have weighed your paper, I would have given you an A+. You know, he said, do you follow me by weighing the paper?
Like, you know, when the risk as a witness is that if you're perjured, you die, I would say that you want to be pretty careful.
Yeah.
You're going to be thrown out. Better not to lie, because the alternative is death.
You're right. You're 100%, 1,000% right. You're definitely a Soloveitchik. That's for sure. All right. Let's begin the sugya for today. We spent almost a half hour on yesterday's sugya. And again, I still reserve the rights to come back to this on Sunday because I'm very profoundly interested in this sugya. And we want to begin the sugya of Amar Rav Yosef. So let's see if we could all find the place it's pretty much halfway through Daftes Amid Beis. And if it helps anybody, the line begins with the word Ubadak. Okay, you can probably count down from the top of the page about 12 lines, and maybe from the bottom of the page up about 11 lines. And if you have the same Tzuras Hadaf or the Vilna Shas that I have, you'll find the line that starts with the word Ubadak, and towards the end of that line, Amar Rav Yosef. No, sorry, that we did yesterday. There's another Amar Rav Yosef, just 1 second. Oh, I'm sorry. 5 lines up from the bottom, Amar Rav Yosef. Okay, another statement of Yosef. Yesterday's statement of Yosef still remains to be studied. There's a lot to it. We just covered it on the surface level, but that's good enough for us. Now we want to get to the next statement of Rav Yosef. The Amar Rav Yosef. The door's closed. I'm very very possessive about my Torah, right? Okay. The Amar Rav Yosef. Ploni rivao lionso, hu viacher mitztarfin lahargo. Ploni rivao lionso, hu viacher mitztarfin lahargo. This is a very strange case. This is a case of homosexuality, and the man comes into Beis Din and he says that so-and-so raped me. This is a homosexual act of rape. Now, he's testifying not about himself, because as far as he's concerned, he was a victim. There's no, you know, again, he obviously could sue for damages, but that's not our discussion. The question is, can we put the man who raped, the rapist, if there's such a word, can we put him to death? Now, in order to put him to death, we need two valid witnesses, right? Two Eidim Ksherim. And Rav Yosef says that the moment that this man comes in and says, I was raped by so-and-so, we're already halfway there. Why? Because we have one witness. And therefore, who the acher, if we can find one other witness who actually saw this rape, which is called revia, if you want to write that down, and now we have two witnesses, mitztarfen, we can join them together, link them in, they can become a kat, and a kat, a unit of Adam, is required. How much is the minimum requirement? Everybody, two, correct? Excellent question, and that's what we're going to have to try to figure out. But in any event, right now he's not considered nogea because he's not on trial in any sense. Is who viachem mitztarfin lahargo? If we get another person who was a witness to the crime, then we hit our goal of two witnesses, and that's called leonso. You may want to underline the word leonso, and then you'll underline on the next line the word lirtsono, because that's the contrast between the two parts of Rav Yosef's presentation. The ratio of Rav Yosef is leonso, and the seifa of Rav Yosef is lirtsono, where the man comes into Beis Din and he says that so-and-so and I participated willingly with consent in this homosexual act. So now Rav Yosef wants to know, wait a minute, the testimony here comes from someone who admits by his own confession that he participated willingly in this sexual act. Well, that makes him into a Rasha, according to the Halacha. By his own admission, by his own confession, he's a Rasha. Rasha who? So therefore Rav Yosef says he's not even going to count for one witness against the other man. Why? That Torah, Amr, the Torah says, Al Teshes Rasha Eid. Okay, we'll read the whole pasuk. The pasuk says the following, and this I have here in the Torah Or, if you have that on in your Gemaras. It says, this is in Shmos Perek, I think it's Chaf Gimel. It says, Lo tisa shema shov, al teshes yodcha im rosha lios eid chamos. Which means that the subject of this, so the safe, at least in this pasuk, is aid, is testimony. Who is a qualified aid? and the Torah says you cannot qualify a witness who's a Rasha. And if by this man's own admission, claims Rav Yosef, he is a Rasha, he participated in this act, which is, by the way, a capital crime, no matter what they'll tell you up the street here, then he's a Rasha, he's posseliated. So we're going to need two witnesses now, because he could not serve as a witness because he's a Rasha.
It's someone else. Here's how we have to read it. Listen to this, Reuven. Amar Rav Yosef. I'm going to rewrite the text a little bit. Amar Rav Yosef.
Ploni Ravani Leonso. That's what he testified, etc., etc. Now I'm going to read it this way. Ploni Ravani Lirtsoni, etc., etc. See, Rav Yosef didn't bother repeating the words Ploni Ravo, right? It's in both cases, the Rashi says there's one person who was either raped or willingly participated in this homosexual act, and he is testifying against the, we'll call him the Boel, right? Say the man who is more, let's say, more the active participant, right? Now, can his testimony against the Boel count as at least 50% of Eidus? Meaning if we find another witness to link up with him. And the answer is, says Rav Yosef, it depends. In the ratio where he says, Leonso, then he was raped, it was against his will, he's not a Rasha. He was forced into this. So therefore he's a kosher aid. I mean, notwithstanding Jerry's question that he's testifying about himself. Apparently he's not testifying himself, he's testifying about the Boel. And as far as the Boel is concerned, he can testify against the Boel. He's not testifying about himself because we're talking about a Maisa Onus. So there's no significant testimony about an act that was committed by Onus. But in the Seifa, where he admits that it was Lirtsono, then he cannot be 50% of the Kat Edim. If you want to rule in this case, you're going to have to get two other Edim, Shnei Macherim, because he himself is Posseliadus. What makes him Posseliadus? He's disqualified under the law of what?
He's a Russian.
Russia. Okay, we have it now? Altatius Russia Aid.
How did the second scenario even come to base?
When he came to Bezdin, the man comes into Bezdin and he says, I participated in a homosexual act with so-and-so. What do you mean how it came into Bezdin?
What?
The man came into Bezdin to testify against his friend, because I guess now they're divorced. You know, today you have same-sex marriages. So at this point, he broke up with his boyfriend and he comes in to testify against his boyfriend. His boyfriend committed this homosexual act. Can he be a witness against that person when, by his own admission, he participated in that act?
He's signing willingly. Death warrant. If he says that,
so let's look at Rava. Rava Omar, Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo. This is one of those famous statements in Shas. Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo. We'll explain. The Ein Adam Mesim Atzmo Rasha. He doesn't sign his own death warrant. As a matter of fact, says Rava, what he says about himself is not accepted by Beis Din. When a man comes in, this is called in English, in the law books, it's called self-incrimination. You know, the whole system is rotten to the core because it's all based on self-incrimination. That's what you call plea bargaining. So you could have a person who's guilty of a crime, he should be sitting in jail for 25 years. At the end, he's going to get 5 years in the clink, and he'll be out on parole in about 6 months, when the man should be locked up for 25 years. That's called plea bargaining, because plea bargaining is all based on self-incrimination. We pressure a person to incriminate himself, and we give him a deal, because he realizes that, you know, and his lawyers will recommend that he accept the plea bargaining, that this just happened here in Sarah. Okay, I don't want to get into detail, but Sarah's case, right? And finally, you know, you give it and you say, all right, I'll incriminate myself. You're pressured into incriminate yourself. Because they offer you a carrot, they offer you, they make you an offer you can't refuse. In Jewish law, that can't happen. It can't happen, because you can get plea bargaining from now until doomsday. His admission is worthless. It doesn't register. It's not worth a dime. A man can come into Beis Din and he admit that he killed 50,000 people, and we don't even hear it. We don't even listen to him. Why? Because Adam Karov Eitzel Atz, whatever that means. But what it means at the end is Ein Adam Mesim Atzmo Rosh. A person cannot testify on himself, even if he's incriminating himself. You might think, well, look, he can't testify on his own behalf if he's gaining something, right? He obviously has some vested interest. So if I come into Beis Din and I testify that you borrowed $100 from me, I'm not believed because obviously, you know, I want to get that money. But what if I come into Beis Din and I testify that I owe you $1,000? Well, that could be accepted. But what if I testify that I'm guilty of a crime? Okay, so go do tshuva. You know, you ate chazer, go do tshuva. But it has nothing to do with Beis Din. Beis Din will not accept your testimony. Two witnesses will tell us that you ate swine. Then if there was hasra, blah, 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 we're going to give you 39 lashes. But when you come into Beis Din and say, well, I ate swine, that's meaningless. Because a person cannot testify and incriminate himself. That's Rava. And therefore, says Rava, since he's not believed on himself, then right, he's called, again, if you want to get the language, then he's called the Nirva, right? There's the Rovea and there's the Nirva, right? The one who's standing in front of Beis Din testifying is the Nirva. The Nirva is not believed vis-a-vis himself. Therefore, we can split the testimony into half. This is really an amazing halacha. And if you want to underline two key words in Rashi, it's two lines up before the end of the page in Rashi, at the end of that line, Dipalginon Dibura. Again, if you have a Gemara, I would beg you, on all fours, please underline those two words in Rashi. Palginon Dibura. Literally, we split his words. We believe him to the extent that he's testifying against his friend, but we don't believe him to the extent that he's testifying on himself. And since we don't believe him, he's not a Rasha. What was the premise of Rav Yosef? Ploni Ravani Lertzoni. By his own confession, he's a Rasha. We can't accept his testimony. So we have to throw him out and we have to bring in two other witnesses. No, says Rav, we can accept his testimony vis-a-vis his friend. Again, when I say his friend, that's in inverted commas. Because he's not believed to make himself into a Rasha. He's not a Rasha. That's called Palgina Dibura. It's as if we take a knife and we split his testimony into two halves. We can accept his testimony on the Rovea, but we will not accept his testimony as far as the Nirva, that's he himself, because of the principle called Ein Adam Mesim Atzmo Rasha. Now you and I may think that Ein Adam Mesim Atzmo Rasha, which means that the halacha disqualifies self-incrimination, is a logical principle. It's not a logical principle. It is within the halachic logic. Remember I told you before that the halacha has its own logic. We spoke about Adam Zoman, but we believe the second pair, not the first pair. That's the logic of the Torah. Here also, we're talking about the logic of the Torah. How do I know that this is the logic of the Torah? We're not talking about something that's intuitively logical.
It's related.
Exactly. Adam Karov Eitzelat. So there are four words here in Rava that are totally superfluous. I could have erased these four words without any loss. All Rava would have had to tell me is Ein Adam Mesim Atzmo Rasha. We don't believe a person to testify neither for the good nor for the bad, because a person is not objective. That's not what it says. If that's what Rava meant, that there was something intuitively logical on a psychological basis that we shouldn't believe him, even when he admits that he confesses that he did a crime, then Rava would have shut up. He wouldn't have said, Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo. Now, Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo is what's called, again, I don't expect anybody in the room to have any clue what I'm saying now, so it's Dok V'Tishkach. Just, I'm going to say it, blurt it out, and forget it. Okay? You promise me? So you're not going to ask me any questions. This is a classic modus tollens, which is Latin. And let me explain to you, forget about modus tollens, because again, as I told you, don't ask me any questions, but this is a wonderful example of Talmudic logic, which is called modus tollens. Okay? And this goes the following. Okay? Okay. This, by the way, is all. It may look like A with two ones after. Okay. Okay, this is what they call a logic modus tollens, right? If all S is P, and Y... I'm sorry. Why is S? I myself am not reading really right. If all S is P, and Y is S, then Y is P. You follow that? Okay.
Transitive property.
Yeah. Okay, so now, let's see how it applies here. Our first rule is the following. Karov Pasul Liabis. Okay? Principle number two. Adam Karov. It says Eitz Hagadah Le'atzmo. And principle number three is therefore Adam Pasul Le'ha'id Al Asm. This is the logic of the halacha. The halacha says the following. Anyone who's related, all S, is P. P for apostle. That was just a hashkacha problem. Adam is a karov. So Adam, that's Y, we'll call him Y, right? Right? He is an S, right? He's an S. Therefore, he is P. You follow? So that's what Rava's logic is. That once we know, A, that a karov is possible, B, we know that an adam is a karov, C, therefore he's possible. Now, follow the logic here. Possible is a legal term. It's not a logical deduction. You know, we're not saying that, oh, we don't know if he's telling the truth, should we believe him, maybe he's this, he got a bad mood, he's masochistic, he's admitting a sin that he never committed. No, forget about all that. That's not what we're saying. There's something called a psul. A psul means a din, and a din is a din. That's the way the halacha operates. So there's a din that a karov is possible. When Moshe and Aaron come in to testify, do we believe that they're lying? No, there's no psychological stuff over here. Leave that all out. It's a psul. A psul means the Torah says that you're a karov, you can't testify, neither together with another witness, nor on behalf of a karov, or even against the karov, whatever it is. Probably more likely against the karov if I know what goes on today. Right? Comes along Rava and he says there's no way that a person could testify that himself, neither for the good nor for the bad. Why? Because he's a karov, he's related to himself. A person is no less of a karov to himself than his brother is to him. He is a karov to himself. Now if he's a karov to himself and he wants to testify against himself, well, we have a principle that karov is posuliatus. So we're not getting into psychological, philosophical debates here about should we believe him, should we not believe him, you know, he got up on the wrong side of the bed today. No, leave that all out. And that's the Shita of Rav. Comes along Rashi, and he says, take a look at the repercussions, the implications of this halacha of Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo. Number one, it means that self-incrimination is completely out. The whole entity doesn't exist. The Torah doesn't recognize self-incrimination because it involves a person who's related to himself testifying about himself, and a Karov cannot testify. So anything he says that might incriminate him and put him on trial is totally irrelevant. Close your ears. But here is the real implication of Rava, based on the sugya of Yosef that we just learned. Ploni Ravani Lirtzoni. We don't hear the word Lirtzoni because the very moment he says the word Lirtzoni, he becomes the accused, so to speak. He's now on trial. He is incriminating himself. That we don't listen to. Palgina Dibura. Forget about that. Just cut it out. What we are going to listen to is the Ploni Ravani part. And Ploni Ravani means that he's testifying against the Rovea and he's believed as one aid, 50%. no different than if he would say Plani Ravani Leonsi, because whether he adds the word Leonsi or Lertzoni, whether he confesses that he was a participant that consented, or whether he denies and he says he was forced into it, it's totally irrelevant, because the very moment he adds the word Leonsi or Lertzoni, he's testifying about himself. Well, he's not on trial. There's no way that his testimony could be accepted against himself. Hence, he's only testifying on the Rovea, and therefore he is kosher liedus. Rabbi Yosef was of the opinion, no. He, in the same testimony, he blows himself out of the water, because in that testimony, when he adds the word Lertzoni, he makes himself into a Rasha. Rabbi says, no, he can't make himself into a Rasha, because ain't other mason not so Rasha, meaning his testimony is not accepted as a testimony that incriminates, because Adam Karov Eitzel Atzma. And now we're ready for the next Rava, and here we turn to Daf Yud Amud Aleph. Omar Rav, Ploni Baal Ishti, Hu V'Acher Mitztarfin Laharga, Avalo Laharga. Says Rava, there are two possibilities in a case where the husband testifies about his wife, that she had a relationship with so-and-so, right? Well, an anonymous person, will call him by the name Joe, right? So he's testifying that Joe had a relationship with his wife. Can he be considered one testimony? One witness.
Who's he?
The husband. So again, you have a husband who's testifying about his wife, that she had a relationship with Joe, right, another man. Can we accept that testimony at least as 50%, meaning again, we'll always need a tziruf, we'll have to add another witness. So Rava says the following, listen carefully. As far as Joe is concerned, meaning this testimony is relevant to Joe to put Joe to death for this crime, then the husband is like anyone off the street and he's kosher liedus. But if we're dealing with the Isha, that she was a compliant, is there such a word? She was a consensual, then he can't testify about his own wife. Because this is a principle called Ishto Kigufo, that his wife is considered like him, and just like he's puzzled, he's not qualified to testify himself, he can't testify against about his spare rib. Okay, that's the wound. So let's read it inside. Omer Rav, Ploni Baal Ishti. Joe had a relationship with my wife. Who the Acher Mitztarfin, he can join up now with a second witness. Lahargo, to put the Boel to death, Avalola Harga, but not to put her to death. Because as far as his relationship with his wife is concerned, again, that's a psul, which is called Karov, and a man is a Karov to his wife. Nothing that he says in Bezdin related to his wife is relevant, we just don't hear it. But on the other hand, Palgina Dibura, we don't have to accept everything that he says, we can leave out what he says about his wife, but we know that he's testifying about Joe, that Joe had a relationship with a married woman, and that is acceptable. Yeah, you and I might have thought, well, wait a minute, what do you mean Joe had a relationship with a married, who was this married woman? It's your own wife, so you don't qualify to testify about your own wife. The answer is that there are two separate judgments here. There's a judgment on the Boel, on Joe, as we call him, and there's another judgment on his wife. Well, as far as the judgment on his wife is concerned, if she's on trial for this immoral act, he, the husband, is not Neman. He has no belief. He can't be. He doesn't have the status of a witness. He's a karo and he's post. But as far as the judgment on the boel is concerned, well, he can testify on the boel. And now we just need one other witness, and we join them together. So it's very interesting because Rava here on Daf Yud Amud Aleph is again applying consistently the same principle called, in Rashi's language, everybody, Palgina and Dibura. Because we're going to believe him as far as the Boel is concerned, but not as far as the Niv Ellis is concerned, as far as his wife is concerned. So in a sense, we're taking half his story, half his testimony, and we're leaving out the other half. And this is what Rava said on Daf Tes Amid Beis, that when he speaks about Ploni Ravani, vis-a-vis the Roveya, he's Belie, together with another aid. But when he says Lutzoni, and he wants to introduce his own guilt into the equation, and he was the Nirva, then we don't believe him. So we're believing him in his testimony on the Boel, on the Roveya, but not on the Nirva. And in effect, we're taking half of his testimony, and that's exactly what Rava says, Palgina Dibura. And he says it the same case of Ploni Baalishti. If he says Ploni Baalishti, he's believed the guy, the Ploni the Boel, even though we don't accept his Eidus as far as his wife is concerned, the Nivellus. Maika Mashmalo. Now we'll see, where did Rashi get this phrase from, Palgina Dibura? What's the Chiddush of Rava? The Palgina Dibura. That we can accept half of a testimony, insofar as it's relevant to the Roveya, and leave out the other half of the testimony, which is relevant to the Nirva. And now you're applying that in the case of the Boel of his wife. We're going to believe him as far as the Boel, but not as far as his wife is concerned. So the Gemara says, Haidu Hach. He's basically repeating exactly what he said. In other words, once he has formulated the basic conceptual principle of Palgina Dibura in the case of Roveya Nirva, that he's believed as far as the Roveya, even though he's not believed as far as Nirva, why did Rav have to flesh it out and give me a second case? You know, I could have figured that out on my own. That's called Hainu Hach. Ma'o de Tema. How do you translate Ma'o de Tema?
I would have thought
that what? Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo Amrinon. But Eitzel Ishto Lo Amrinon. What is a Karov? Well, if I testify about myself, I mean, I am the greatest Karov, the greatest relative to myself, because my body is my body, so it's not like another body which is related to my body. It's not like we have some genes in common. I am that the Bala genes. But in the case of Ishto, maybe that's not a real Karov situation, because Adam Karov Eitzel Ishto Lo Amrinon. You see, what's unique about Ishto is that it's not what you call a blood relationship. It's a marriage relationship. And the question is, how do we define the psul of Karov in Hilchus Eidus? So are we only talking about what's called She'er Basa, which means blood relatives, or are we going to expand that to include even marriage relationships? So that's the chiddush here of Rava, that Adam Karov Eitzel Ishto, that even with regard to Ishto, he's considered a Karov. Kamash Malon, Rav wants to teach us that just like a person is not believed on himself, he's not believed on his wife, and that's why Rav had to add this case to tell you that we will accept his testimony on the Boel, but not on his wife. Now, we have what did he say?
It's nothing that you said.
All right, good. And Steve, what happened yesterday? You were here yesterday. I didn't see you.
No, no.
Everything worked out.
Yeah.
Okay. I got nervous.
Somebody in a frat.
Okay, you're a pillar here. So I've also, we're gonna have to end in about 5 minutes, but I want to spend 5 minutes with you. First of all, let's make a note of where we got up to. We're on Daf Yud. And the second thing I want to discuss with you is back here for 5 minutes on Daf Ches Amud Beis, because this is going to be my introduction to what I want to pick up on Yom Rishon in Mirtz Hashem. If you take a look on Daf Ches Amud Beis, Ches Amud Beis, sorry, see if you could find Abaye. It's approximately halfway down the page. You know what? Leave out Abaye. I mean, I'm going to just cut off the head of Abaye, go to the body of Abaye. You'll see a line that starts to Kuli Alma. Mm-hmm. So if you drop down one line, you'll see a line that starts with Rishonim, and then it says Hacha B'mayaskinon. And I'm going to just jolt your memory over here. We have a Machlokas Tanoim about Hasra. In capital cases, in order to condemn a person for death, you need a Hasra. That means the witnesses will have to warn the criminal right before he commits the act that he will be guilty of violating the Torah, and this will be his punishment. What happens if the Hasra was more general than specific? The aid, when they gave the Hasra, they failed to mention which of the four categories of Bises Bezdin is going to be implemented. In other words, the violation of this crime, will it incur skila, sreifa, herik, fechenik, which one of the four? So that's a machlokes in a braisa between, just let me get the name straight here. Where am I?
Yehuda.
Tanya, oh. Yeah. Between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachom and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda requires a specific hasra, and you have to mention the exact precise nature of the punishment. Very specific. The Chachamim didn't accept Rabbi Yehuda. They held that all you have to do is notify him that he's going to be put to death. Exactly how he's going to be put to death, that's outside the parameters of a hasra. The machlokas now between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim and Mishnah of Motzi Shemra, as to whether or not you need 23 judges or it's sufficient to have 3, is in a case, according to Abaye, where the witnesses gave a general hasra, not a specific hasra. And if we link up Rabbi Meir with Rabbi Yehuda, then there's no possibility of condemning her to death because she only received an incomplete hasra. And Rabbi Yehuda says, ad she yodiu bi ezo misu nera. Which specific death? The Chachamim, on the other hand, say that we need 23 judges because we can, in fact, rely on this testimony, and we can, in fact, put this woman to death, despite the fact that the Hasra was general, because we're not accepting Rabbi Yehuda's principle of Ad Shiyodiyu V'ezem Misa Yomus, but rather a general Misa, that's enough. You will die. Rav Papa, on the other hand, has another machlokus about Hasra, and that's in terms of what's called a chaver. If we assume, which is a big if, that the purpose and the goal of Hasra is to make sure that a person realizes and knows that he's violating the Torah and he'll be punished for that, then what about a case of someone who's a scholar and we know that he knows? We don't really need the Hasra to notify him. So the purpose of Hasra is what's called lahavchin, to distinguish between shogeg and mezid. Shogeg means I didn't realize this was prohibited, I didn't know, he's pleading the fifth, you know. And mezid means he was aware. So in order to bridge that gap, in a case of a rank and file citizen, we don't know if he's a mezid or a shogeg, we have to notify him right before he does the action that this is a terrible action he's about to engage in, and these are the repercussions, this is the principle. But in a case of a chaver, who's someone who's established a baki, we know he knows the law, you don't need asra. It's an exercise in futility. And that's going to be the sheet of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, which is 3 lines up from the bottom of the page. Chaver eino tzorach asra. If he's a chaver is someone who knows the law, he doesn't need asra l'fichelo nitna asra. The whole agenda and the whole purpose of asra is lahavchin bein shogeg l'mezid. And he is amazing. We know he's amazing, even without the Hasra. Now, the Gemara doesn't quote the Shita of the Chachamim, but by implication, we know that the Chachamim didn't accept Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, and they felt that Hasra is a prerequisite even in the case of a Chaver. So if this woman who's on trial now and being accused of having this illicit relationship is a Chavera, that means that she knows the law, therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, she doesn't need Asra. So what we're going to do is now we're going to link the Chachamim of our Mishnah of Motzi Shemra that require 23 judges with Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. The case is the case of a Chavera. The witnesses are testifying. They admit that they did not give Asra. Says Rabbi Yossi that since she's a Chavera in this case, We don't need Asra. Hence, we can try her for a murder case and condemn her for death, even in the absence of Asra, because she's a Chavera, and according to Rabbi Yossi, you don't need a Asra in the case of a Chavera. And therefore, we need 23 judges. Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, holds like the Chachamim in this case. The Chachamim say, no, even a Chaver needs a Asra. And in this case, that the Eidim admittedly did not give a Asra, there's no way that we can condemn him to death, and therefore we're only dealing with the mominos, the monetary aspect of the ksuba, etc., and 3 judges or not. The question I want to leave you with, and this is what we want to pick up on Sunday in Mirtz Hashem, is why did the Chacham disagree with Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yossi seems to have a compelling logic that in the case of a chaver, we know he is amazing. Why do we need asra? The chachamim must have had some pushing, you know, some agenda that they were pushing that everyone, no matter who you are, you need a hasra. So we try to figure out why is that so. So let me take this opportunity to wish everyone a great Shabbos. And this Parshas Pinchas, it's also the beginning of Bein HaMetzarim. And we hope and we pray that with all our sadness and our mourning about the situation of Klal Yisrael and the lack of the Mikdash and the exile and the Brits and the French and whatever else is going on in the crazy world that we live in, that Hashem should bring about the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash and the Geula Shlema v'mehera mamish. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you so much.
Meeting on Sunday.